All right, everybody. Hello and welcome back. Super excited for tonight's show. I was supposed to have one guest on. He unfortunately canceled. We got him scheduled next week. All was good. I did find quite a treat for everybody last minute, and I'm very, very thankful that he could do this on pretty short notice. But, thank God for all the guys that we kind of got situated and all this stuff. But America First Foreign Policy, what the actual America First Foreign Policy is and should be, at least in me and my guest estimation, and what it actually is. We're going to be talking about that today and some of the debt stuff, all that good stuff. So make sure you go to all the links below to figure out where you can find myself, my guest, everything he's got going on. I know he has a new thing kind of going on with the great Tom Woods. I'll let him kind of tell that here in a minute. And of course, Tiger Fitness through the links below. Get yourself some supplements to get you the best pump you've ever experienced, to get you the best gains you could possibly get. Use code Kyle. Check out when you go to tigerfitness.com and go to Deem Fit through the link below. Use code SarahM25 and Fox & Sons Coffee for some absolutely fantastic coffee. Cannot recommend that enough. I literally just broke my Keurig coffee pot this past weekend, so I need a new one in the worst way. So anyways, make sure you hit that like button, subscribe, share, do all that good stuff. Good to see everybody in the chat already. And without further ado, let's rock and roll here. And returning to the show, I have with me the great Scott Horton. How you doing, man?
I'm good. How are you?
Excellent. Well, Connor told me to make sure I ask you about this, so I'll let you plug it right up front. What do you got going on with the great Tom Woods?
Well, it's the Scott Horton Academy, which it says it right there because I've been using StreamYard to record some of my courses here. Essentially, Tom set me up my own Liberty Classroom. And so what it is, I'm doing two long form courses on the war on terrorism and the Cold War with Russia. Of course, my last two books, basically walking through all that stuff. And then I got a whole really great team of guys, a great lineup of guys. So the great Jim Bovard is going to be covering, you know, his review and basically 40 years of investigative journalism, the most accomplished libertarian journalist in American history. And then we've got Ramsey Baroud on Palestine. We've got Richard Booth on the truth of the Oklahoma City bombing. We've got William Buport on how America's lost every war since 1945. And C.J. Kilmer on how Woodrow Wilson is the worst person who ever lived. So our whole first set of courses is going to be just great. And then we got a bunch of other stuff like kind of planned for expansion, you know, over the next couple of years and whatever, and different things that courses that we can add and things like that. Of course, we have some pretty obvious possibilities, like bringing on Daryl Cooper. Ooh. Or Angela McArdle, or, we have a really great team of economists and historians and thinkers of all descriptions at the Libertarian Institute. So I'll be poaching a lot for my own institute and having people specialize doing a lot of things. I originally offered the Palestine spot to Jeremy Hammond, of course, who's one of our fellows there and wrote the book on it, Obstacle to Peace. But he said he was just too busy. So I said, well, even though it's mostly all libertarians and my guys, I figure on Israel-Palestine, I'm going to have my Palestinian friend, or one of them, really the guy, the Palestinian that I know the very best is Ramsey Baroud, who writes for us at antiwar.com and is just a really brilliant guy, refugee from Gaza, survivor of a family obliterated off the face of the earth by the Israeli regime, and just a brilliant intellectual and scholar and author and historian and everything. And I've seen, three of his 6 or 8 episodes that he's done so far, and they're just fantastic. So couldn't hope for better stuff. So I'm really excited about it, man. I'm done recording, but not editing my Terror War one. And I'm about almost through with Bill Clinton. I guess I got one more day on Bill Clinton. Mm-hmm. So that's like, you know, what does that make me, like a quarter of the way, I guess, through Provoked, something like that. Not even quite, maybe a fifth of the way through Provoked. So, essentially a course walking through. Tom Woods calls it Scott Horton slowed down. So like you're about to ask me about Ukraine and I'm about to cram a bunch of stuff into, you know, a 10-minute long rant or answer of some kind. This is me taking as long as I can to go ahead and explain it all the way through and help you guys get your head all the way around it all. So, I'm really proud of it, you know, already what it's shaping up to be. It looks like it's going to be a real cool thing. So hope everybody gets excited about that. And if you go to scotthortonacademy.com, you can see the great promo video that Tom Woods wrote it and I spoke it. And then, of course, the great Dan Smotz did the video editing and put together a really great preview video for the whole thing. So all that, and you can sign up with your email there so you're the first ones to know about it at scotthortonacademy.com.
Hell yeah. Well, you were mentioning all those names, and I'm thinking, okay, well, I hear a China chapter with Joe Mullins, Patrick McFarlane, and maybe Lyle Goldstein or somebody like that. There you go. Yeah, when my daughter gets here in August, and I know people probably sick of hearing me talk about my daughter, but I'm so damn excited. I can, you know, sit her down when she's 8 years old and be like, all right, here's why Woodrow Wilson is the worst person in the world, and here's Scott Horton's recommended person to explain to you exactly why, honey. All right, now go listen to that.
Exactly.
Yeah, so there's a whole lot going on in the world. I guess we should start with kind of like the minor stuff, and I don't know, maybe people would think it's not minor, but what do you make of this whole big, beautiful bill and kind of the battle going on around it, you know, at least as much you've paid attention to it?
Well, I admit I am a bit tuned out from the news cycle. I'm always fighting the last war, you know, on some big project. So I'm a little bit tuned out from it, but of course I know it's typical Republican spending thing. And then they castigate people like Paul and Massey for daring to stand against it. Mm-hmm. But that's the most obvious thing in the world. Who's in the right there? And they go, oh, yeah. No, but we got to keep the spending up to make up for the damage that Biden caused. Oh, to make up for it by spending more money? Yeah. Break, man. And you know what? People don't like hearing this, but it's really true that Reagan was a bigger government guy than Carter. And W. Bush is a bigger government guy than Clinton. And Trump is a bigger government guy than Obama. And Trump is a bigger government guy than Biden. I mean, Biden actually came in and passed a huge, you know, but Trump did the CARES Act, was already massive. And then, of course, our horrific price inflation crisis that we're suffering now is a result of Biden coming in and doubling on Trump's massive monetary expansion to make up for the crash, the deliberately inflicted COVID crash that they put on us all. And so it does make sense, Kyle, from the point of view of like, if you were an official on the White House staff, do we want to have a Great Depression now or do we want to have a Great Depression some other time? The answer is always some other time. Right. So, always want to inflate, always want to kick down the can down the road. This is even right their official excuse for why the Fed is supposedly independent from the executive branch, which it really isn't. But the reason for that is because it's acknowledged that if it was just up to Congress or the president, they would always inflate and never allow the correction to come. But the job of the Fed chairman is to take the punch bowl away right when the party's getting too out of control, right? That's what they say. Which is not really true, of course. They are the ones dumping all the alcohol into the punch bowl in the first place. But the crisis that they've got us all in means then that, well, what do you want? Like overall, Mr. President, you want a stimulative policy or do you want one where we go ahead and call in all the bad loans and wipe out all the bad debts and have a severe crash and then try to get a fresh start? And the answer, if you're Paul Volcker, this is the one time, right? This is the example that they all cite. Paul Volcker in the Jimmy Carter years and early Reagan years, he came in and jacked interest rates way, way up. And Reagan hated it. And Reagan kept cutting taxes anyway, which is stimulative behavior, right?
Yeah.
And saying, no, stop. Because anything that's good for the economy means more businesses taking out more loans, inflating the currency. You know, they're not going to raise the reserve ratio. They're just going to cause a recession to try to prevent people from taking out these loans by jacking the interest rates way, way up. But then they relented by, I believe it was in, you know, late 83 or maybe it was by early 83. So then they had like a year and a half before the election to inflate again, to crank interest rates way, way back down and get everything, you know, on a big upswing in time for the election. At least he had that, you know, but so that's the position that the Trump people are in, right? Is keep stimulus spending, keep cutting taxes, keep cutting regulations, keep doing everything you can to boost essentially the bubble, the artificial prosperity for now, and put off the worst pain until later.
Yeah, and that always is the fiscal decision that they always make. It does seem like Paul, what the hell is his name? Jerome Powell, I'm sorry, kind of has a little bit of that Volcker in him, but not nearly enough. Like, he's left interest rates higher for longer, but he doesn't have, I don't think anybody has the tolerance to say, all right, we're going to put him up to 20% and just chips fall where they may. People are going to have to default, but we need to kind of wash shit out to kind of get back on track. There's zero tolerance for that.
Oh, Trump would have him killed, right? I mean, there's just no way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He had a collapse on his watch. Yeah, absolutely no way. So
that was a joke. I mean, but he would have him removed. He would go absolutely to war and replace him one way or the other. He would force a resignation and get rid of the guy. He would not allow it.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think Trump wants that on his watch. Well, speaking of other things that Trump doesn't want on his watch, it's been interesting watching the last couple of weeks between Iran, Israel, and Trump and the negotiations. There was a lot of noise initially that Trump was leaving Netanyahu out to dry and that, he's really done with him this time. And then, that whole kind of weekend went by where it seemed like everything was getting real exciting. And then you find out, oh no, pretty much Israel is going to be able to do whatever they want. Witkoff rejects the plan, and Trump made some deals without really big considerations for Israel, but he's pretty much just like, yeah, do whatever you want. What do you think of everything that's happened over the last couple months? Because it seemed like things were going good, and now it just kind of seems like now we're just going to kind of muddle along when it comes to Israel and Gaza.
Yeah. Well, look, man, as ever, there is daylight between any American president and the Israeli prime minister on Iran. It's no different when it was Bush and Sharon or Bush and Ehud Olmert. No different than the 8 years of Barack Obama with Benjamin Netanyahu then. And the only reason there wasn't daylight in Trump's first term is because he just completely capitulated to Netanyahu then and tore up the deal, replaced it with nothing. But threats that were not followed through on, thank goodness. And then Biden essentially just kicked the can down the road. He inherited Trump's maximum pressure campaign, kept the sanctions on, made no real move for negotiations, and essentially just left everything on autopilot where Trump had left it with him. And instead of getting right back in the deal, remember the narrative was Trump, some crazy guy. So why wouldn't Biden just get right back in every deal that Trump tore up? No, not so. Not when it comes to Israel. Doesn't want us in this nuclear deal. They hate it. And why? Because it guarantees a civilian safeguarded nuclear program with enrichment, with Iran retaining the capacity to enrich uranium, and which is an absolute, red line for Israel, but not for the United States. And the reason it wasn't for the United States, even de facto under W. Bush, but certainly Obama backed down from this. Bush officially was still, this was his line, but Obama accepted enrichment because the Ayatollah ain't going to give it up. He's just not. So if you want a deal, you're going to have to accept enrichment. Now the question is, what kind of all different restrictions and surveillance measures and things that can we do to make sure that that enrichment is not enriching for military purposes and diverting enriched uranium to any military purposes? If you're willing to negotiate all that in good faith, you can. The Ayatollah doesn't want to fight, and he doesn't want a nuke. What he does want is a latent nuclear capability, right, and he's not going to give it up. So what does that mean? That means just like Brazil or Germany or Japan, they have mastered the fuel cycle. They have proven to the world that they have the ability to enrich uranium hexafluoride gas up to higher levels of purity of uranium-235, which is the sweet stuff, the dangerous stuff. And so above 90% is weapons grade fissile material, weapons fuel. So what the Iranians have is a civilian program that's for electricity and that is safeguarded by the IAEA under the Non-Proliferation Treaty, and they're not willing to give up their proven ability to eventually be able to make a bomb. That's essentially where they're leaving it. So this is why I'm basically optimistic about this, Kyle. Like, I mean, it's true that Trump could just be a complete ass about this the way he was, for, you know, 8 years ago when he tore up the damn treaty for no reason, other than Netanyahu lied to him and told him that the Iranians were cheating, which is a bunch of crap. So he could just be an idiot and sabotage his own diplomacy if he's determined to do that. But he doesn't have to. You know, he has a perfect opportunity here because, like, the long story short of it is the Iranians are saying, we won't make a nuke if you don't bomb us. And we're saying, we won't bomb you if you don't make a nuke. Once you make a nuke or we'll bomb you. And they're going, we're not making a nuke, so don't bomb us. So we can just put that down in writing. That's the agreement. I mean, the Iranians are never going to admit that they're never going to call it a latent weapons capability, right? That's all. They deny that part of it. No, it's just like this program.
It kind of reminds me of like Taiwan, essentially, like with strategic ambiguity. We're basically like, they like to have this gray area right there where like Iran wants to just have just enough to say like, hey, don't piss us off. Everything's good. But you and I both know Iran, they just kind of want to be left alone. They want to do what they want to do. They don't want to, you know, they want Israel to leave them the fuck alone. And because they know that if they fuck with Israel too much, the U.S. is going to get in. They don't want any of that.
Right. Yeah. And so where that leaves us, though, with the Israelis is the Israelis won't accept this. Right. And although they may have to. And but you can see, I mean, in your question, you talked about the back and forth in the media about, oh, breaking news, Trump is going to accept some enrichment under this deal. And then they go, oh, no, we never said that because they just can't have that leaked out and whatever. That is really the only question. If Trump is committed to getting a deal done, then he's going to have to accept enrichment.
Yeah.
Simple as that. And there's no way in the world that Ayatollah is going to give that up. I just can't imagine any way in the world that he's going to. After all this, there's just, he's not. However, under the previous deal, they were willing to ship out their entire stockpile of enriched uranium to France and let the French turn it into fuel rods and ship it back into the country for them to use as fuel in their reactor. And then the plutonium waste, which is polluted, it's not nuclear weapons fuel, it has to be further refined, but they don't have the facility to do that. So under the old deal, the Obama deal of 2015, the Russians had the responsibility to come and take the roof off the thing and take all the plutonium out of there and take it back to Russia with them. So the Iranians were left with no uranium route to the bomb. At least they'd have to essentially start over on zero stockpile and zero even potential plutonium route to the bomb. But their uranium route to the bomb, very restricted. And now with a uranium bomb, you can basically only make a gun type nuke out of, which is a big old heavy thing that they couldn't deliver anyway. You know, if you're going to make a miniaturized implosion weapon, that virtually always has to be made out of plutonium. So in other words, even if they got an atomic capability, they still couldn't deliver the damn thing. Other than what? Drive it there on a flatbed truck, you know, across Jordan in the river somehow. You know what I mean? It's just ain't going to happen. So, so there's really just, again, a very latent deterrent here. Like, don't push us into the corner kind of thing. And it is a self-fulfilling thing. I think Netanyahu, you know, overall is probably willing to settle for a permanent Cold War against them. If he can use Iran to rally the Shiite monarch, I mean, pardon me, the Sunni monarchs to his side, then, you know, that's fine. If he could get America to bomb Iran for him, that's better. You know, his own men told the New York Times that, well, the way we look at it is if we start the war, you guys will have to join us and help us finish it. Like, dude, are you guys kidding me? He said that to the New York Times? That our plan is we're just going to drag you in and force you to fight. What? You got to be kidding. And that was what they said to, like, one of their main guys, Ronan Bergman, who's this, you know, extremely close to Israeli intelligence or, you know, in the Netanyahu government. I mean, they were speaking for Netanyahu. That wasn't some rat. That was like the policy. That was what Netanyahu told somebody. Go tell the New York Times that here's our plan. We're gonna force you to get in our fight. It's pretty nuts. And they've had a couple of stories like that recently. So where does that leave us? Right. I guess my take is if I got to make like short-term predictions here, it's got to work. And Trump has got to tell Netanyahu, tough. I made a deal. It's a tough deal. It's a good deal, and it'll be good enough for you. It's
the best deal ever.
That's right. And we just have to leave it at that. We're not going to fight them, and you're not going to launch a war. And in fact, somebody asked Trump, did you have a, because this was in the paper, did you have a phone call with Netanyahu where you told him not to bomb? And he goes, you know, I'd like to be very honest about this. Yes, I did. Okay. And he got on the phone and said, now listen here, Mr. Prime Minister, I'm taking care of this. And, you know, it's an interesting relationship there. You know, they're very close. And, you know, Trump has made a deal with Miriam Adelson to be, you know, Israel's best friend ever for the $300 million. Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. And all that. Like at the end of the day, Trump is the leader of the world empire. Mm-hmm. Netanyahu's just the prime minister of crappy little Israel, good for nothing, no resources, do nothing for anyone ever. Mm-hmm. You know, no good Nick Israel. So just how far over backwards is he supposed to bend for them at America's expense? And even Donald Trump has got to consider that. You know, what is his subservience to Israeli goals mean for the long-term success of his presidency here? How much is he really willing to sacrifice for them? And a war with Iran has a potential of being an absolute catastrophe. And I don't know what the Ayatollah would really do, but the potential is there for him to kill thousands of American soldiers in Kuwait, Bahrain, Qatar, Saudi Arabia, UAE, and then a zillion dollars worth of economic targets all up and down the Gulf, could close the Straits of Hormuz and just completely crash the world economy. Mm-hmm. And if it's a fight for their survival, then yeah. And they'd probably hit soft targets all across the all across Europe with Hezbollah type agents. I don't know if they really have any in the United States. But throughout Europe, sure. American, Israeli, and European interests in Europe and elsewhere in the world would be easy pickings. And they could fight, you know, on their own timetable. They wouldn't mm-hmm. have to, you know. And by the way, you notice how Israel bombs their consulate in Syria, they take their time. Then they announce beforehand, hey, we're about to shoot a salvo of missiles, so make sure to get your defenses ready. Mm-hmm. You know, and then, you know, they do like a symbolic retaliation.
Right. And they always hit military targets too. They don't target civilian targets.
Right. But if it really comes down to, they feel like they're in a fight for their lives. And that their deterrence doesn't mean anything if they don't follow through on their ultimate threat. So like, look, if you go for a real air campaign in Tehran, then we have to hit the Fifth Fleet in Bahrain. We have to hit CENTCOM headquarters at the Al Ulud base in Qatar. We have to hit your guys in Kuwait so that you know that we meant it when we said that we would. You know, this is the same reason why, only the president can launch nukes and nobody can stop him. There's no one in the chain of command that can stop the president from ordering the launch of all nukes. And that's because that's what makes it a credible deterrent. So he never has to do so. Mm-hmm. Okay. That's a hell of a game of bridge you're playing, but that's the deal. If someone could stop him, that diminishes the credibility of the threat.
Right.
And so you got to keep the threat at the highest kind of pitch there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Geez. So I guess we should probably put a bow on Iran. And what would you say the actual America First foreign policy perspective would be or should be for I'm dealing with Iran at this time?
Drop all sanctions, normalize relations, send Vice President Vance over there on Air Force Two. He didn't kill Soleimani. He wasn't in the government at that time. Mm. Shake hands with the Ayatollah. Tell him Trump, sorry about that. Let's make friends and do business, and we'll pump oil out of the Caspian Basin together and make money. Mm-hmm. Why fight? We like cashews. You guys like Boeing spare parts. And we don't have to balance against Saudi back toward Iran and all these imperial games. Mm-hmm. Just be a normal country in a normal time and treat them like one. You know, in the Monroe Doctrine, he says, you know, you guys stay out of the Western Hemisphere and we'll stay out of Europe. And, you know, you stay out of the Americas, we'll stay out of Europe. And this could apply to anywhere in the old world. He says, we'll treat whatever current regime is in power in any given European state as legitimate, as de facto legitimate. whoever rules Bulgaria, that's just between the Bulgars. That's just not going to be our business because we're just too far away for that. And that should be the case for Iran and for everybody else as well.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I think the only kind of thing that might look like an egg on Trump's face, and maybe people have forgotten at this point, is that he left the JCPOA, which for all, you know, intent and purposes actually was a decent enough deal because right. it kept Iran's enrichment down very, very low. And then funny enough, as soon as you get out of it, they're now enriching up towards, what is it, like 63% or something like that. Right. So they've, you know, skyrocketed enrichment, at least compared to what it once was. You had IAEA inspections that verified everything. We get out of that, and now we're like, oh, actually, maybe we should have never did that. But, yep. you know, like you said, Israel kind of pulling the strings there a little bit. And then got
based on Netanyahu's lies, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. What a shame. So I don't know. If anybody in the Trump administration's listening, then just rewind a couple minutes, listen to that a few times, and we'll go from there.
Hey, call me. I'll fill you guys all in on this stuff, man.
Yeah, he's our most reliable guy on anything foreign policy. So, of course, the big thing that Trump ran on, and I think you extend a little bit more better faith than I do, but is Ukraine. So I don't think I've heard you cover it. And if you have, then I apologize. What do you make of this whole minerals deal situation?
Oh, I hate it. Yeah, no, I mentioned it a couple times.
Okay.
I mean, it's a pseudo security guarantee. And that's how they talked about it. That's how Trump and Rubio both talked about it as well.
Yes.
That the purpose of doing this is it's kind of a backdoor way to keep Americans involved. Mm-hmm. That we have this major interest there now that we have to protect. Isn't that what you want? Is for us to be compromised by you. And we've already given you so much money that you owe us. And so we're going to take your minerals, but you're going to make some money and you're going to keep us around. And so don't you want that? Well, that's crazy. There's hardly any minerals there we're taking, certainly in the part of Ukraine that's going to be left here. You know, all the heavy industry is in the far eastern Donbass district in Luhansk and Donetsk, and we're not getting that. The Russians are getting all that back. And so, you know, they make a big deal about rare earths. There's very few rare earths there. You know, there's some good journalism about this where on all the lists of the rare earth possessing countries, Ukraine's not on it. They got essentially nothing. And so they have some minerals, but not these, you know, particular ones that count so much, these special magnets and lithium and whatever, all this stuff. So that's essentially the whole thing is a hoax, right? It's a scam to get America, you know, implicated in the thing. On this side of the Ukrainians. Now, it's better than putting troops there, like in Korea, as a tripwire. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a story today where the Americans, it's in Bloomberg News, the Americans refuse to promise air cover for European troops in the country. You guys want to go send some kind of peacekeeping force in there? We don't promise to protect them. We're not doing that. That is between you guys at worst, you know, but it's definitely not up to us to solve for you. And so, you know, I like that. I mean, I have to say that I think Trump is really sincere in wanting to end the war, if only to prove that it's all Joe Biden's fault. And if they hadn't stolen the election in 2020 from him, everything would have been fine over there and all that. See, and he knows what to do with the thing. But like, honestly, he was, I think, really just counting on his personal chemistry with Putin from the few times that they met and what very, you know, little relationship they ever had a chance to build there. At least they had some common enemies and the damn Democrats, you know? But he didn't understand how to weigh what's really at stake. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the short history here is the Russians but after 7 years of unsettled civil war, they finally invaded and said they're taking the two far eastern provinces. Then that was in February of 22. Then in September of 22, the Ukrainians were successful in this sort of double feint where they took back all of Kharkiv and got into the very little bit of Luhansk. And then they also took back about half of Kherson. Down in the south, including, you know, pushing the Russians all the way back across the river. And at that time, the Russians reacted by saying, oh yeah, well, we hereby officially also annex Zaporizhzhia and Kherson. Now, they don't control all these territories, right? They control virtually all of Luhansk, but not quite. They control significant proportions of Donetsk, Zaporizhzhia, and Kherson, but not all of them. But they have officially annexed them, made them part of the Russian Federation, passed a law and signed it and all this. So they're far short of their declared goal. Now they're saying their terms for Ukraine's, you know, for coming to a ceasefire, a permanent armistice with Ukraine, includes Ukraine withdrawing from those four, you know, the parts of those four territories that they still control. Well, they're just not going to do that, right? They would rather keep fighting. And so would the Russians rather keep fighting. With and the Ukrainians, with or without American help, they still have pledges of financial and military support from other European countries. And so they figure that they can hack it. It's not the same situation like Afghanistan, where we were doing all their fighting for them. And as soon as we leave, the Afghan National Army just melts away, you know, had no business really even being an army at all. It was just, you know, built by foreign interests. This is not that, right? Our guys haven't been on the ground there fighting. We've been helping coordinate and passing weapons and all this, but it's the Ukrainians who've been fighting and they're not on their last leg. You know, I don't know how many guys that they have, but they're still on the offensive in some places. Essentially, the Ukrainians are in a strong enough position that they want to keep fighting. Mm-hmm. They're not in a strong enough position to make any demands at all. Right. And in fact, they're going to lose anyway, just not yet.
Yeah.
Right. But they're losing slowly. And so they're strong enough to not just want to cry uncle and give in. And yet Trump can't really threaten Russia with them because right. They are no threat. And there's no amount of new missiles that we can pour in that are going to make the difference. No amount of sanctions we can add that are going to, you know, turn the tide. And no foreign nation is sending in troops to actually help fight the war. Right. So that means that they're screwed at some point, you know, sooner or later. Yeah. And then, so what does Trump have to offer Putin to say, hey, why don't you cease fire where you are now? Instead of going all the way and seizing all of Kherson and Zaporizhzhia and Donetsk the way that you say you want to. And all he has to offer are carrots. No, they're good ones. We could lift all sanctions on Russia since 2014. He's proposed and says we could completely normalize relations again. We could do joint development deals, which I guess means American companies developing Siberian resources and whatever. I mean, this is beautiful. This is... Yeah. You know, somebody in the Kremlin throttle this man and tell him to just work it out with Trump, dude.
Right.
Figure it out with Ukraine later. But God dang, man, Moscow and Washington have got to be friends again. We cannot continue on this way. And yet he's so far short of his goals. And especially when, geez, Odessa's right there. Mm. Kharkiv, the city of Kharkiv is right there. And then once you take Odessa, then there's the strip of land, Transnistria or the Transdniester, this small strip of land on the Moldovan border, on the Moldovan side of the river, on the border of Ukraine and Moldova, where it could make sense if you're a right-wing pundit on TV in Russia or in the Duma there. What we should do is just keep going all the way till we make that land bridge to Transnistria and unite all of, you know, the Russian sovereign areas there. Resolve the question of that frozen dispute by making it officially part of the Russian Federation. I'll solve that problem once and for all. And deprive Kiev of Odessa, the jewel of the Black Sea, their most important port city, and leave. Mm. He's going to make what's left of Ukraine now a severely anti-Russian rump state with all the pro-Russians now taken out of the country. Well, he can at least make them a desperately poor, helpless, landlocked, you know, pathetic rump state under the protection of Poland or whatever, and keep them out of his hair. Mm-hmm. So from the point of view of Putin and the people to the nationalist right of him in the country, why stop now?
Yeah.
And especially when any promise that Trump makes them could be gone in 3 years.
Right.
The Democrats win and completely cancel it. Or when some freak wins the primary instead of J.D. Vance and wants to turn the policy back toward Lindsey Graham's way.
Yeah, I've kind of thought about this a little bit, where it seems like really the best option would have been to just, as soon as he gets in, is just say, sorry, this was Joe Biden's mess. Ukraine, you're in an awful position, but we're washing our hands of it. If you guys want to make peace, that's cool. But I had a few people tell me, oh, Trump had bad intel. And like, my response is, how could, like, what did you think you could have had to offer them? Like, you have no leverage in the situation. If you're the United States, like, the only thing you could do is say, hey, we're going to do more of the same, which is basically what Trump has said. You know,
when he announced from the beginning that, you know, he hates Zelensky. He thinks Zelensky is completely illegitimate. He doesn't want to back him at all. He'll keep sending weapons. But then again, like, he's just completely signaling really to the Ukrainians that no point cooperating with me, because I don't really give a damn about you. So, which was, I think, a big mistake in the way that he framed that. It was, you know, in terms of the art of the deal, he made Zelensky choose. And what was behind their big Oval Office fight? That was Zelensky choosing on the spot. Well, screw this. The president is declaring he does not have my back.
I have so too much pride.
Turn my back on him and go to England and tell them, you see what that big bully's doing to me? You guys are going to help those still, right? And guilt them into it, which is what he tried to do. Mm-hmm. You know? So I think Trump really, you know, overplayed his hand there and screwed up whatever leverage he really had with the Ukrainians there. But I agree with you. He should just wash his hands of it. Say, look, you Brits and Germans are so smart, you negotiate the peace. Yeah. Once you bring Angela Merkel out of retirement, we'll do Minsk 3 and you guys can end this war. And what's that got to do with the United States anyway? Nothing. Mm-hmm. And I absolutely agree. And then, and watch the thing settle real quick as soon as America steps out of the way, and the incentive of all sides to get America to do this, that, and the other is deprived. And now they all just have to figure it out for themselves. They're going to figure out real quick. Nobody can afford to keep this thing going.
Yeah. I'm sorry. The other thing that happened recently that I'm kind of curious your thoughts on was this whole drones flying at Putin. And I think you might've saw it. I saw some news saying that, like, Zelensky's now asking for a ceasefire after they almost assassinated Putin with some drones, and Trump hasn't said a word about it. Some people are saying he doesn't know. What's your take on this whole situation?
Well, I think he is not getting good briefings.
Sure.
There was a story, I'm sorry I missed this, but Eric Garris at antiwar.com was telling me that there was a story about this where there was an interview with Tulsi Gabbard where she said that Trump decided he doesn't want to get the morning briefing every day. And so they're trying to figure out, like, how they can get him the briefing, tell him what's going on in the world. And, you know, he went off, and when he said, I can't go understand what's going on with Putin, he's gone crazy. He's firing all these missiles at Kiev for no reason. And the reporter says, you think it has anything to do with the attack on his helicopter and the attempt on his life? And Trump goes, you know, I hadn't heard anything about that. But yeah, maybe that's what it's about. Yeah. I guess maybe that's why he fired all those missiles at Kiev. You know, if they tried to kill him or something, that would make sense. It's like, dude, you're just on the golf course. It's not anybody's job to keep you up to date on what is the front page of antiwar.com today. Like, there's a lot going on, Mr. President. You got to at least have heard of it. Someone tried to kill Putin. You need to know that, Mr. President. Don't tell me you don't need to know that. I'm telling you, you need to know that. There was an attempt on the Russian president's life today, sir. Right? Like, there's just no excuse for this. Like, whoever his chief of staff is, whoever he has ever hired, who has the stature to tell him, no, sir, I insist you pay attention to this right now. They need to do that, right? Somebody's job is to do that. Stephen Miller or Tulsi Gabbard or what's her name, the chief of staff lady from Florida. Somebody needs to be able to say, no, sir, I'm sorry, Mr. President, I insist that you pay attention to me for 5 minutes here. We have to talk about this. Something important, something really big happened today. You need to understand what's going on. And so it's just, I mean, what the hell is this? The Biden administration, you know, I thought, and see, Biden, Donald Trump looks like the most competent administrator compared to his predecessor.
Right.
But remember who Biden was replacing? Donald Trump. Complete chaos. Where, you know, a senile old coot in the basement seemed like stability and reason compared to the Tasmanian devil that he was replacing here. Right. Yeah. So, that's who Trump is. You know, turns out Biden's got stage 15 Alzheimer's disease and is ready to drop dead any minute.
Yeah. And cancer.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean that Trump knows what's up, because he ain't. And then, so what does it mean that they tried to kill him? I don't know if that was the CIA or not. I don't think Trump knows either. Would the Ukrainian SBU try to murder Putin without permission from the United States? Would the United States give permission? Would the White House give permission? Or did that just come from lower down? Or who would make a decision like that? Would the Ukrainians do that without looping the Americans in? They'll just have to find out later. Hope they're not mad. Because the thing is, you could really start an H-bomb war with something like that. You could really start a really bad war. You could spread the war with a successful hit on Vladimir Putin. He would not be replaced by, you know, probably not be replaced by someone as competent as him, but by someone as warlike or worse than him. It would be virtually certain, right? His previous stand-in, Medvedev, there has been the junkyard dog for the last 3 years. You know, he's the one who comes out and threatens nuclear war. He's the one who comes out and threatens, oh yeah, well, maybe we will just take Kharkiv, right? He's, you know, staked out that position. And he is, as far as I know, Putin's natural successor. He already replaced him once. He's one of Putin's most trusted guys. Who, you know, he put him in charge of, I think it was Gazprom, one of the major, or Yukos, it might have been Yukos, that he put him in charge of. So, you know, he's a very well-trusted guy, goes back with Putin a very long way. And if Putin was dead and it was him, if Putin had just been murdered, blown out of the sky, and it was him, I would expect him to be making severe threats. And then what's Donald Trump going to do when somebody starts really threatening him? What does Donald Trump do when
that happens? Back down?
He doesn't back down, dude. No. He starts saying, oh yeah, well, I got bigger H-bombs than you do, pal. You want to see him? We've seen how he's done that before in, you know, just arguing with Kim in North Korea. And that was really just brinksmanship, because he really was trying to bring the guy to the table, but he was willing to make severe threats of total extinction of North Korean society off the face of the earth. And he gets into an argument like that with the guy who just replaced Putin after Putin's been assassinated. I mean, think about what that means in American history when somebody kills Jack Kennedy, when someone kills Abraham Lincoln or McKinley. And these are the hugest events, the major turning points in our society. That's how we measure them. It's how everything changed after that, boy. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, you're talking about playing with nuclear fusion here. Mm-hmm. It's completely insane. It's just completely insane. And it does come down to Donald Trump having a bit of the same problem as Biden, which is he also is too old for this job. He's too interested in going outside and playing golf and fucking around and not, you know, keeping his eye on the ball, really paying attention to doing his job. And he could just make it clear to Putin, I told the CIA to suspend all operations in Ukraine. It's over. Any crazy shit that they do to you, you tell your government now. You got it straight from me. It ain't us. We're out of there. We're not doing it. And the Ukrainians, they're on their own. In Ukraine, you guys are on your own. You're not diffusing your responsibility onto us anymore and hiding behind us anymore. So you better get it straight and then hope for the best, but get the hell out of the way there. I mean, imagine, because I guess I do. I don't think that Trump told the CIA to kill Putin. I don't think that that's right. That doesn't sound right. So then what? So it had to have been the SBU just did it anyway. Mm-hmm. Now imagine it had worked. Now, you think the Russians are going to accept that the CIA had nothing to do with this? That it was just the SBU and that America is not ultimately responsible? No way.
Right.
No way. You know, any more than if... Well, it's hard to come up with a good, you know, Russian proxy, but I don't know. The Belarusian services came after Joe Biden, right? It's unthinkable that they would be willing to take these kinds of risks with our lives. And, you know, I have one of the quotes in the books is from the old general in charge of the war, Valery Zelensky. They said, aren't you afraid that you're risking nuclear war here? And he goes, what difference does it make? You know, the guys who died last weekend, they don't care either way. It's just like, yeah, listen, I understand you're upset and everything, but no, you lost some infantry last week means go ahead and break out the atom bombs, because at this point, what difference does it make? doesn't follow, pal. And no, you don't get to make those decisions for the rest of humanity here. This is completely nuts.
Yeah. Yeah. So I wonder kind of what the Ukrainians' perspective is. I feel like for Zelensky, he just doesn't want to lose. Like, it's sunk cost. He's like, yeah, we can't stop at this point. We have to show for something, because probably all the nationalists, specifically the people that are fighting, are like, yeah, we're not going down without, you know, you'll have to kill every last little one of us. And then there's probably a decent bit of people that are just kind of like, we just want whatever's going to happen. And then obviously there's more people who are a little bit more towards Russia. What's your perspective of, like, where Ukraine's at, like the Ukrainian government, that is?
I mean, this is the worst part, right? Is we've known, they have said since, you know, the start of the war that they're going to have to negotiate. They know that they're not getting Crimea back, and they know that they're not getting the Donbass back. They'd like to hang on to Zaporozhye and Kherson. I'm certain it's too late for that now, but there was a time when they could have negotiated over that potentially. But they've known all along that they cannot reverse Russia's gains in the country. It is all sunk cost all the way down. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, it might be oversimplifying to say he's just afraid of the right-wing Nazis. I think he's probably in agreement with them that they would just rather go down like the American South and just lose valorously than call it quits early, you know?
Yeah.
Go ahead and take their licks, and then they know that they did all they could. And you know, there's a severe hatred there from the ethnic Ukrainian nationalists from the far west against the Russians. And I think they would rather die than to capitulate, many of them. And certainly they have threatened to kill Zelensky and his predecessor Poroshenko before, and that's Andriy Beletsky and Dmitry Yurash and other Nazi leaders have repeatedly threatened, if you make peace with Russia, we'll kill you. We'll hang you from the tree on Kramatorsk Street, or whatever the hell it's called, the main drag in Kiev there. So there's a huge disincentive to deal there, although he can just get out of the country and go retire to the Brookings Institute or whatever, you know. But you know, I mean, their morale isn't broken. I have a Google alert for Andriy Beletsky, who's the head of what was the Azov Battalion, which is now known as the 3rd Separate Infantry Division, or even the 3rd Army Corps now. They've tried to kind of promote the thing to a higher level. And they're still leading assaults out there on Russian positions in Kharkiv and, you know, near Luhansk there. And keep giving each other awards for valor and all these type of things. You know, I think there's a very good chance if he survives the war, which I guess there's probably a good chance he will. He's the commander. I think he's probably not leading from the very front. You know, there's a pretty good chance that he could be a political leader, you know, for the long-term future of Ukraine here. And for his own purposes, right? It's all public choice theory, right? For his own purposes, it's probably better to continue the war. Mm-hmm. Build his own stature up as, you know, a famous general who was willing to fight to the bitter end till he, you know, was absolutely forced to go to the courthouse and sign the thing. And so, you know, that's probably a big part of it too, is, you know, the people who are involved in the war looking for their political future as the rulers of what's left in the new Ukraine, you know. Mm-hmm. The whole thing is such a catastrophe, such an unforced error on everyone's side, on Ukraine's part, on America's part, and on Russia's part as well. It just absolutely did not have to do this thing. It's just terrible.
Yeah, it's the old Ron Paul saying of it didn't have to be this way. So I guess we would probably put a little bit of a bow on this as well. What should the America First policy be for Ukraine?
Yeah, like you said, just come home. That's it. Forget about it. Mm-hmm. Tell everybody sorry. This is somebody else's fault. And, you know, this is what we've been saying about Donald Trump from the beginning, is he ain't from here, man. I mean, he's from America, but he ain't from politics. He's not a governor. He's not a senator. And none of this is his doing. Mm-hmm. Just got to D.C. Everybody hired me because I'm the businessman. I came here to fire everybody because everybody sucks so bad at being the government. But nothing that they did is my fault. Couldn't possibly be. I was on TV out in L.A. at the time. For all the bad decisions that they made, everything that John McCain and Joe Biden ever thought was right, he's not implicated in any of it. So just come in and wash all of our hands of their errors. We want rid of them. We all wish we could go back to at least the end of the Cold War and just have no Clintons and no Bushes and no Bidens and no McCains. Just have some decent men. I mean, never even mind our great heroes like Ron Paul, who ran for president in 88 and was ignored by the population of this country. What could have been, but never even mind that. Just anybody but these goons. Give me Gary Hart, man. I'll settle. Yeah. Just not the Bushes and the Clintons and the Bidens and the McCains and everything that they've touched. Let's just not do any of that anymore. That's it. America first means come home. You know, there are no Hitlers or Stalins in Europe today. There are no Polish colonel fascist Nazis running around. There are no French militarists and British imperialists. If we come home from Europe, all of these countries can work this out. They got every incentive in the world to have peace and no incentive to fight. You know, build your pipeline, trade your natural gas for your euros and get along.
Yeah, I got you. Yeah, no, I completely agree and endorse all of that. So one more time, yeah, if the Trump administration's listening, just call up Scott Horton. I wanted to talk about some of the debates and other guest appearances you've done recently. So someone commented over on Twitter, the fact that Scott didn't throw a chair at that neocon Elad when he was on Tim Pool's show is beyond me. Scott's got the patience of a saint. You didn't get a little feisty there, but you know what? I thought it was very entertaining. And I remember at the end of the show, go ahead.
Well, I usually rewatch those to see how bad I am so I can try to chastise myself and be less worse next time, which never really works. But I didn't even rewatch that one. I knew that it was terrible. When it was over, I says to Phil that, that was terrible. I shouldn't argue with the guy so much. And he goes, that's exactly what he just said to me. He shouldn't argue with you so much. Like, I just, you know, always in a situation like that, before it starts, I always tell myself, just be cool. And then I'm not. All I can do is just be myself. And that's like, no, you shut up. Nah. Just, you know, not the very best. But, you know, I think ultimately, even if people don't like me, which is fair, they can tell that I know what I'm talking about and that the other guy doesn't. And that's how I went. And like, you know, I debated this Israeli scholar on Zero Hedge.
Yeah,
he made all these claims and I just debunked them all in a row, like six or
eight. It was impressive. It was very impressive.
and it's like, look, man, I know it's not fair, but I know Gareth Porter. I interviewed Gareth Porter 300 times. Mm-hmm. I read Gareth Porter's articles 300 times.
Yeah.
And so I'm sorry, but you're just not going to mess with me on the Iran issue. You can bring up a fake assassination plot from 2011. I know that one too. You know what I mean? I know them all. And so like, there's not too many people in that same situation who just have the same chip on their shoulder that I have. You know what I mean? I was joking around on Twitter that people wonder, you know, they ask me, how do you know all this stuff? These aren't memories. They're vendettas. So it's because of my hatred of these liars that I can compile all of this crap. Like, oh, yeah. I remember that one. Okay, go ahead. Corpus Christi, used car dealer, drug dealer. There's no assassination plot. The ambassador wasn't even a member of the royal family. They had no reason to even hit him in the first place. Case debunked. Next story. And then... You know, I think even if people don't remember the details, the you know, final result sticks. That like, boy, those libertarian anti-war dudes seem to always win. You know, the other guys seem to end up going, oh, I actually don't know very much about that. Yeah.
Yeah. Scott Horton's famous takedown were Bill Kristol and Tim Kass when he said, by the way, you're all a bunch of China hawks here. I have a short of that on my YouTube. That was one of my favorite moments perhaps ever, because I don't think anybody's really called him on that. Like, and it was a real quick little right there too.
Yeah, you know, I was a bit disappointed that Tim wasn't there when I was on last time. He had been traveling and I missed him, but I had considered whether that would come up. Mm-hmm. And that, like, you know, you look at what the Chinese are doing to the Uyghurs, man, that's nothing compared to what Israel's doing to the Palestinians. Yeah. Why would you care about the Muslim Uyghurs anyway, other than that's the Chaicoms persecuting them? Otherwise, if you had a couple Israelis directing it, then it just wouldn't matter.
Well, not to mention that's also the same group that we also kind of mess with a little bit in Syria as well, that we fund.
Yeah, that's true. They fought for Obama in the dirty war in Syria. And I like Tim Pool. He's a good dude. I wish I had a chance to hash this stuff out with him more, because I hear him say, and I think he's sincere when he says, look, you know, I'm not all obsessed with Israel, but I don't think we should be backing them in this. I don't think we should be backing anybody in anything. I think that that's reasonable. Only the next step is, well, you have to oppose it then, because we are. Right. That's the thing, right? It's not just a matter of don't support it. It's a matter of let's all oppose it together, because it's sick and it's wrong and it's going to lead to terrorist attacks against our country. It's the same thing. Just develop the next step. It's not our fight. Well, if it's not our fight, then we better get the hell out of it now instead of continuing on for another year or two or whatever these people have in mind. You know?
Yeah, these people drive me nuts, because there's like this group of people who fence it about Israel. Well, they'll say, yeah, we shouldn't fund it, but you know, Israel also has every right to destroy Hamas. And you know, like, oh, all the speech laws they're passing here in the US, all the money we sent over there, we're just not really going to talk about that. That's not that big of a deal. But it's like, okay, Trump literally sent $17 billion over to Israel already this year. The most aggressive anti-free speech legislation in recent memory is being passed right now. They're deporting people for writing op-eds about Israel. And like, you're just silent about that after bitching about free speech under the Democrats the entire time, which you're right to do. But now all of a sudden it's your guy. Now, oh, no, we can't say anything bad. You got to shut up and get in line.
Yeah. And look, I mean, I understand that on one side is a bunch of stinky commie hippie college kids,
right,
who just a minute ago, their big crusade was cutting everybody's son's dick off and turning him into a girl. Right. And then these are the same people now who like all of a sudden care so much about the people of Palestine.
Right.
And so I can see why not just Tim Pool, but every single person who's ever been in his audience would just want to not agree with those people about anything. But that's just stupid. That's just not really the way things are. Those people wear shoes and they drink water and observe the same blue sky that you do. It doesn't make all those things wrong. You know what I mean? And just the fact of the matter is, if you call it luck, they got right once.
Right.
And the fact is, the American right wing's support for Israel has been completely inane and stupid and bankrupt and counterproductive for America's national interests for a very long time now. And we could be getting along with Iran and getting along with every other nation in the Middle East. If it wasn't for Israel, we'd have never been attacked on September 11th. It wasn't for Israel. And go back to the first World Trade Center. Well, hell, the first actual Al-Qaeda attack in America, really Egyptian Islamic Jihad, sort of proto Al-Qaeda, was an Israeli rabbi named Kahane, who advocated the mass expulsion of all Palestinians from the West Bank and Gaza and the theft of all the last of Palestine in 1990. The next one was the World Trade Center bombing, where Ramzi Youssef, the guy that cooked the bomb, wrote letters to all of the New York newspapers saying he did this to avenge the poor Palestinians suffering the tyranny of occupation by Israel, as well as condemning American bombing of Iraq from bases in Saudi Arabia and the rest of Al-Qaeda's complaints against us. It's always been like this. The whole post-Cold War era, they are the giant. And look, America's an empire anyway. We'd have a terrible East Europe policy anyway. We'd have a terrible East Asia policy anyway. But our Middle Eastern policy could be far less worse if it wasn't for Israel. And they insist there's no daylight, no daylight. But on the most basic level, they're enemies of the Shiites. But it wasn't Hezbollah that knocked our towers down. That was Al-Qaeda that did that. The vanguard of the most radical Sunnis, the Salafi Sunni, you know, Wahhabis, on this political revolutionary movement, completely contrary to the goals of the Ayatollah and the and his, you know, allies in the region, now including Baghdad, thanks to the United States of America, who invaded and put the Dawah Party and Supreme Islamic Council in there in the Iraq War of 2003 through 8 or 11 there. You know, we have had and we will continue to have a terrorism problem in this country because of Israel. And by all means, we should point our fingers at the terrorists, this guy who assassinated two people at the Israeli museum or consulate, where that was, in Washington, a couple of weeks ago. This other guy who did, you know, a sort of pseudo flamethrower attack there in Boulder. And those people are responsible for what they've done. But I'm just saying, it's happening because of what Israel is doing. And then these people are then bringing chaos to our land as blowback. Now, if this was just a matter of supporting our friend because he's a good guy and he's in a bad situation, that might be one thing. Mm-hmm. But it's not that. It's an ethnic cleansing campaign. It's absolutely, you know, illegal and morally criminal crimes against humanity. And yes, even genocide, the deliberate, avowedly stated, motivated, deliberate destruction of a society, bombing all of their government buildings, all of their records, all their land holdings, and all of their, you know, genealogies, bombing all their schools and, you know, universities and hospitals, leveling entire cities, destroying every bit of their markets and their, you know, any potential of a civil society of any kind, erasing, you know, massive parts of Gaza off the face of the earth with munitions and rolling bulldozers in and just flattening the entire area, all while killing tens of thousands of people. That is a genocide. It's an attempt to erase the Palestinians, Gazan civilization, and replace it with something and someone else. And just, we absolutely should not be doing this. Is a height of criminality what we're supporting, and it's the kind of thing that will get our people killed. And I don't know this yet, but I don't give a damn. I'm perfectly happy to speculate about this until I'm proven right, which is that this is what happened in New Orleans on New Year's Eve, man. Mm. Is this guy was an American Army vet, converted to Islam, swore his loyalty to ISIS, and then murdered a bunch of people partying on Bourbon Street.
All right.
Right. Like, other than children, the most uninvolved civilians you could think of, right? It's just New Orleans black folk out partying at night, you know, right, on a holiday. These people have nothing to do with what the Israelis are doing, have no power to exercise on this question whatsoever, but they have to pay the price with their lives. They have to be maimed and killed as you know, their crucifixion for Israel's sins. Mm-hmm. And I just had absolutely enough of it. I don't give a damn what happens to Israel. I care about this country, these right. people. And, you know, we know that that guy recorded himself on his drive from Houston, New Orleans, ranting in videos that he posted on Facebook and I guess to his family about, you know, what all his motives were here. And they say that he declared his loyalty to ISIS, and then they clam up and they won't say the rest of what he said. But you know that it was all about Gaza, dude. And I get that, you know, for the transcript, I mean, you know, in that italic sense that, like, man, I bet you. And I think you guys know that I must be right about that. And this is the same thing as September 11th. This is what caused September 11th, was the Israelis murdering children in Lebanon, motivated these Egyptian engineering students studying in Hamburg to go volunteer for a Saudi to kill Americans to get revenge for what Israel was doing to the Lebanese. And that's the price we pay for Israel's crimes, not for being a nice little Jewish boy just trying to get along in the world over there, but being vicious killers.
Yeah. Yeah, for real. And I was talking to Connor a little bit about this earlier, about you don't really hear about Greta Thunberg anymore because all of a sudden she decided to start talking about Gaza. And then all of a sudden, oh, look at that. She's on the right side of one issue finally. And well, our darling of the environmentalism cause, she can't be our darling anymore, because guess what? And actually, like, we like what Israel's doing there. Like, they fund all of our pockets, and, you know, if they want to ethnically cleanse the Palestinians, that's fine. So, you know what, little Greta Thunberg there, you got to shut up. In fact, I got that little squid right there specifically because they were you know, I'm sure you saw the headlines. They said she had an anti-Semitic squid. I'm like, okay, bet. There it is.
Unreal. And look, you know, I go back and forth on this stuff, man, because I'm from Austin. I've been raised around hippies my whole life, and they used to be so much better on so many things. Mm-hmm. And just the 20 teens, early 20s era left, just the worst damn people, man. I just hate everything about them and what they've been up to. And you know, we joked for so long about where's the anti-war left. They helped Nancy Pelosi, you know, climb back into the Congress on Cindy Sheehan's back in 2005 and six. It wasn't even Obama. It was Nancy Pelosi was good enough for them to just shut the hell up and go away. And we always mocked them and resented them for that. And by the way, Code Pink stayed good. Max Blumenthal and Glenn Greenwald and you know, all the guys at Consortium News, and there are plenty of great leftist writers who stayed good on the wars the whole time. But I'm talking about the bulk of the movement out there. When I say Code Pink stayed good, I mean Medea Benjamin and her, you know, four best friends. But the mass of the movement, they melted completely away. And we used to mock them for that, like how insincere they all were. And then, but now that they're back, I wish they were gone. Because exactly what we're talking about. Tim Pool, just for one, and he's a great thermometer of the way a lot of people feel about this. He just can't get that commie ick on him by agreeing with them about anything. And if Greta Thunberg actually would just go back to talking about the damned environment and leave Palestine to me, then I think things would be a lot better. In other words, she and everyone like her who've been so off-putting on every other damn ridiculous left-wing issue this whole time by associating themselves with the Palestinians. They hurt the Palestinians. I mean, it's on one hand, it's good that left-wingers are doing the right thing and sticking up for helpless people in this situation or whatever. Like, but at the same time, you know, the art of war would dictate that you stop being such a damn commie when you do it. And you don't assassinate innocent civilians out in front of the Jewish whatever it is in Washington, D.C. Right? You get clean for Gene. You attack the right from the right. Mm-hmm. You know, this is if it's, you know, the morals of the New Testament and the concepts of the Declaration of Independence and our Bill of Rights, if that's the morality that we structure our society around, conservative Christians, then we shouldn't be doing this, right? You don't have to be a commie to say that. And again, the more you're not a commie, the more helpful it is for you to, you know, be able to try to change the minds of people whose minds need changing. So, you know, it really just sucks. And especially, like, you know, I always look at the whole environmentalist movement as a giant psyop false flag to get you to not care about the war. I mean, what's the biggest environmental crisis in the world?
The war machine. Yeah,
the U.S. military is the greatest polluter on the planet. They burn as much fossil fuels as Germany, right? On a yearly basis. And then they pollute the land with depleted uranium and all whatever, all chemicals from their insane explosives that they leave littering all over the ground, not to mention the duds that, you know, blow the arms off of and legs and faces off of unsuspecting people, take the lives from innocent civilians who pick them up and all these things. It's just, and the damage to sea life and everything else. Like, if you're really an environmentalist, well, just skip straight to anti-militarism then. Otherwise, what in the world are you talking about? Oh, and then you're here to lobby for control over the temperature of the atmosphere over the long term. That's your interest, not pollution, even in your own town, but just overall carbon levels. And then after making me suffer through this just suicide-inducing drivel, this absolutely inane garbage for decades, now you want to come and lecture me about Gaza? You know what? Please just go back to your stupid climate thing. It's not helpful to have Greta Thunberg. It's just not. We're better off without her. You know, she can help galvanize opinion on the left. But again, what does that do other than repel the people who we need to convince?
Right.
You know, it's the American War Party overall. Yeah, the liberals support war, but nobody thinks they're any good in one. Nobody thinks that they're going to fight. It's support for interventionism on the right that we've got to undermine. And so the more the left is hectoring them and screaming in their face what, you know, Zionist pigs or whatever they are, the more they want to be one.
Right.
Right. This is exactly the opposite of what we're trying to achieve here.
Yeah, dude, exactly. So leave the anti-Zionism to the big bearded mechanic here in Pennsylvania. And then, of course, the great Scott Horton. Yeah, dude, this was fantastic. And like I said earlier, I appreciate you being able to come on short notice, Scott. Anything you got to promote, anywhere you want people to go support you, any of that stuff, feel free to drop it now and we'll wrap her up.
Okay, cool. Well, thank you again so much for having me, man. Love hanging out with you here. Yeah, ScottHortonAcademy.com. That is the big new project. It's going to be fantastic. I'm just really excited about it. Go to ScottHortonAcademy.com to check out the great Dan Smotz preview video that he made there and enter your email address to sign up so that you guys will all be the first to know when we go live, which should be, you know, I don't know. I hate to say another month from now, but something like that, I think. Of course, ScottHorton.org for the show. I got 6,000 interviews for you. Oh, man. And did I mention that I can't mention, but I got a big announcement coming up regarding the Scott Horton show. So you guys are going to want to tune in to ScottHorton.org, sign up for the podcast feed there on all the different podcatchers and whatever on YouTube.com/ScottHorton show and all that. And then I got my whole gang over at the Libertarian Institute. 25 of the best libertarians. You know, we're like maybe a distant second place after the great Ludwig von Mises Institute, but we're kicking a hell of a lot of ass over there at libertarianinstitute.org. And then buy my books. Just go to scotthorton.org or libertarianinstitute.org, which published them all and a bunch more. Or just go to amazon.com and search for my name. I wrote, kind of the true history of the Afghan war. It's a little too late to argue to get out now that we have, but that's Fool's Errand. And Enough Already is about all the terror wars. And Provoked is about the new Cold War with Russia and the war in Ukraine as well. So think that's about all I got, man. Thank you very much.
Yeah, of course. Well, like you said, make sure you go check out the Libertarian Institute, because beyond them just being fantastic libertarians, they're just absolutely phenomenal people. I was on Tommy Salmon's show, as you would call him, everybody's friend, just the other day. So that should probably be airing tomorrow.
Okay.
And, yeah. So, like I said, Scott, thank you so much. I think we'll call our stream there. Everybody, thank you so much for listening. I'll check YouTube because apparently YouTube went down for a little bit, and worse comes to worse, I'll download this and upload it. But regardless, everybody, thank you so much. And until next time, everybody, take care.
Get your exterior painting to-dos done easily with Dutch Boy Pristine Exterior Paint. With its rain-rinse technology, rain naturally washes away dirt and grime. Plus, it resists cracking and peeling, making it perfect to withstand the harshest weather conditions. Save big money on pristine exterior paint and start your painting project today. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening this week. Save